It's the Congressional Corner today with Republican Congressman John Faso of New York's 19th District, in office since 2017. John, welcome.
Thank you, Alan. Great to be with you again.
How's your job going?
It's going well. I mean, I'm really enjoying it. It has, there's never a dull moment in Congress and in the life of a member of Congress. And the range of issues that you get involved in and the number of people and constituencies that need to talk to you, want to talk to you, it's really a very interesting job. I have to say, it's a great honor to serve.
John, are you getting, I'm noticing here at the radio station, that there are more and more people who seem to be divided along partisan lines. I mean, some angry people. I'm wondering if you're hearing from a lot of angry people, and if you are, how you handle it.
Well, I hear from all sorts of people, and it just really depends on what the issue is. And what I try to do is treat every issue and treat every constituent with respect, listen to what they say, whether I agree with them or not, and try to actually come to a fair conclusion on whatever topic is at hand.
As a political scientist, I used to teach a concept called off the hook or in the tank. Off the hook, as you know, means you know, you're in a very competitive district, you go to your leadership and you say, I'm going to have to oppose you on this. And they say, okay, John, you're off the hook. Or, no, John, you've got to vote with us, you're in the tank. What's the deal?
I haven't had that experience
really
this year. The two most contentious issues in 2017 were the health care bill, which I voted for, and the tax bill, which I voted against. And in neither instance was there any really the hook or the tank issue, as you've described it. On the tax bill, I have to tell you, I probably had five or six meetings in the office of the whip with finance staff.
We're talking the congressional whip to whip you into shape.
That's right. The congressional whip, Steve Scalise, who, by the way, just got out of the hospital. He had another surgery the other day, and he's really undergone a remarkable recovery from his injuries. But I had five or six meetings with the whip and other staff and other members about the tax bill, and I was never felt undue pressure on this topic.
Well, but five or six meetings, a lot of meetings.
It was, but it wasn't the kind of thing where they were twisting my arm. Sure, they were trying to persuade me, and I was candidly making points that I felt were important. And frankly, a number of the things that I had talked about as concerns, they addressed in one way or the other, things that were never met the public eye, but were things that were important issues to constituencies and constituents.
For example,
well, how the pass through would, well, this was in the public eye, how the tax treatment for subchapter S and pass through organizations would be handled. And there was a lot of concern with the approach that was taken in the House bill. I thought, on balance, looking at it, the Senate bill had a better approach. And a lot of the things that I said and that others said were taken into consideration. You know, one of the things that really impressed me in this process, even though I was not a yes vote at the end, Kevin Brady, who's the chairman of Ways and Means from Texas, he has the patience of Job, that man. He listened to members. I was in probably 10 to 12 different meetings where he was listening to reactions and input and asking for advice from members. And I sat through those meetings, and I made most of them for the entire time. And it allowed me to get a lot more perspective on the different issues that different regions of the country had and different type of businesses had, whether they were auto dealers or whether they were farmers or whether they were service providers like law firms, for instance. So the range and the complexity of the tax issue is one that is enormous.
But in the end, John Faso, the killer here was the deductibility of state and local taxes.
Yeah, and one of the things that we did impact, meaning the Northeastern members from New Jersey and New York in particular, was we did get them to put in a deductibility of up to $10,000 for real estate taxes. the Californians really advocated as well for ultimately including income taxes in that, because California does not have high property taxes because of Prop 13, but they have really high income taxes. The issue of SALT for me was that we were going to drive many successful people out of the state. Many of those business people who will take their businesses and their philanthropy out of New York. See, Alan, it's already happening. We are already losing a lot of those people. And I was concerned that the elimination beyond the 10,000 of that deduction would actually accelerate the trend of those folks out of New York. And I believe that that will be the case. So New York really has to figure out how to adjust its tax system to lower taxes and to be less confiscatory on a lot of folks, because we're driving away people out of New York. I know so many people who've told me, even before the tax consideration came up in last year, that they were planning to take themselves or and their business, or once they retire, they're going to leave, or they're leaving for estate tax reasons. And we're in a competitive marketplace among the 50 states, and there are places where it's much more advantageous to change your domicile to another state. So that's a real issue for New York, and that issue is going to continue now that this tax bill was enacted.
And yet you did vote against it.
I did, and I, because I felt there were two ultimate reasons. One, the practical application of the removal of the SALT deduction in excess of $10,000. I didn't think that was fair to do it on 2 weeks' notice. It should have at least been phased in over a number of years. And the second reason was federalism. I believe deeply that the federal government shouldn't tax the revenue that a citizen may pay to its state or local government from a concept and a theory of federalism. Let the states have the domain here. They require, and whether you agree or disagree, and I've disagreed with a lot of what Albany has done through the years, but it's still the democratic process within a state for a state's representatives to decide these policies. And I felt that it was wrong after 103 years of established federal tax policy to change it.
We only got a minute, but John Passo, there are those who think that Donald Trump, it's very simple, was punishing those who voted against them. You know, in the election, and that the red states made out like bandits and the blue states got punished.
Well, I think actually it was more a function of how did you fit the tax reduction, namely the corporate and individual rate reductions, within a budgetary framework, because this was being done through budget reconciliation. And so it had to fit within a no more than $1.5 trillion impact over a 10-year period. And it was driven more by that than it was by, I think, any political calculation. But, you know, people can disagree. But I've not seen that.
I disagree, by the way.
Okay, you disagree.
I mean, I think that that Trump has really been lousy towards the blue states.
Well, for instance, this doesn't really adversely affect Massachusetts.
It does?
Of course it does.
We pay a lot of taxes.
Not to the degree. Massachusetts taxes are significantly lower than New York's, as you know.
Well, as you know, they call it Taxachusetts, and that's for no reason at all.
No, that's their maximum income tax rate, I think, is 5.5, and their property tax rates are about 30% lower than in New York State. So
it doesn't make it any happier.
Well, no one likes to pay taxes, Alan, but the question is what's the relative impact on people, and the impact in Massachusetts, frankly, is a lot less.
John Passo, great to talk to you, and thanks for being here with us today. When we come back, we have something else to talk about.
Thanks, Alan.